Hashtag 2050, your trip to the future. A guest and a talk to imagine the world to come. I'm Rebecca Armstrong. Come aboard, make yourself comfortable. The future starts here and now. After Tamar Jacquely from Georgia, today my guest is a French young man. Nathan Metenier is 20, and 5 years ago, he became a climate activist. You want to know how? You just have to listen, of course. Nathan focuses on advocating at the European level in the Youth and Environment Europe. Together, we talked about the holy growth, about the GDP, gross domestic product, about the words to address the climate issue. He told me about the need for new governance and about the coalition he is working on with networks of youth-led NGOs. But in this conversation, you'll also hear about collapsology, North responsibilities, technology, and obviously 2050. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Rebecca.
How and when did you become an activist?
I think it comes back to my childhood. My parents were not very much committed to climate change and environmental issues, but my mom was still, you know, very close to nature, and she showed me the importance of, you know, connecting with nature, to like looking around you and knowing that, yeah, we are actually really connected to, and if we harm nature, in return, nature can harm us as well. And I remember like this exhibition where there was something like on, like, I know it was like a polar bear or something like that. And I remember being like, yes, that's actually the consequences of our actions. And I was maybe 8 or 9. And I think the first thing I did was during the COP21, to the Conference of Paris in 2015, I was 15. I was in my first year of high school, and I was really like, you know, like thinking, but no one knows a lot about climate change, especially in my high school, and I really wanted to do something, and so I set up like a kind of local association in my high school, and we organized a kind of young, small, 20, COP21, with a small Paris, conference of Paris. And we invited economists and scientists, and we watched all together a movie. And the idea was really like to talk together and to try, you know, like to trigger, the discussion with the other students. So that's maybe how I fall into it.
And to imagine the world in 2050, you choose the word climate and environment. We know that right now we are on a dangerous path, even if we, politicians, companies, the people, humanity in fact, even if we take today important decisions about our way of living, even if we change our standards regarding the holy growth, carbon emission, etc. What kind of world do you see regarding the climate?
Yeah, and I think it's really good to say holy growth, because it is holy. It is a myth. There is something that is irrational in the way I think we work and we think growth, because we're like people, and having an indicator like the GDP that's evaluating our well-being without having anything else that, you know, a measure of the economic performance of countries and of businesses and of, you know, like regions as well, and in the world at the global level. That's something that I think is crazy. So for me, that's the first thing, is to fight against this kind of holy, mythical growth, and to have new indicators that really try to take into consideration other aspects of our society, other aspects of our well-being. And I think that we should definitely have a GDP of our well-being that would help us to build a better society. And I think it's always, of course, complicated to answer a question like that, because it's so broad. But there are some concrete things, I think. First, having a new GDP. Secondly, like concretely saying that we are in a climate crisis. Let's stop talking about climate change, but let's put the good words on the good phenomenon and talking about the climate crisis. And I think that when we're facing a crisis, when we are facing a war, we could even talk about climate war, then, you know, that need strong action. And so having a green budget, this idea of having a kind of new Marshall Plan and to really have like a strong economic commitment from our politicians and, you know, like to really have an economic transition, an energy transition. But, you know, all of that has to be fair. So we need also to really include like social aspects in all of that. And that's really part what I'm doing at the European level is instead of just saying, oh, we are environmentalists or we're advocating for climate change and for better environmental actions. But we really try to never forget the social aspects of that. And I think that's something that all the kind of youth-led, environmental and climate change NGOs that are working a lot on these issues really try to work on, not speaking about environmental crisis, but social and environmental crisis, not talking about a green budget, but talking about a fair green budget. So kind of really including these social aspects in the transition we need to do. And of course, the third thing I would say is that, you know, sometimes like people say, oh, we need like huge action. We need like complete behavior changes. Of course, we need that. Mm-hmm. But there are some really easy things we can do right now. You know, like a Tobin tax, like taxing all the financial transfer all over the world, that would be something really concrete that we could do right now. Stop having tax haven. I mean, this is really simple as well. We need like our governments to get together and to really say we're gonna do it. So like, you know, before talking about like this when politicians say we need to do that. Well, let's do these first very essential things that would, you know, like give us a lot of money to then, you know, concretely act and have some more ideas.
And assuming we do all these things, to using the good words, connect all the issues and also find money to invest in these transitions, which world in 2050?
For me, I would love to have a world where we don't talk about climate change anymore, or at least we talk it as if it was like, you know, it would be like a myth or like a good story to tell to our children, because like in 2050 I will be 50.
Yes.
or 51. But no, yeah, exactly. Just like that's something that we actually did it. We got together, we used our money, we did it in a fair way, and all of that for a better world. And of course, like, I mean, it's amazing to ask these things because it's also like a huge question, but also like really, I'm really happy like to be able to just like, you know, like that imagine the world, how it could be. I imagine a world where we have technological improvements and that helps us to like, you know, better travel, better communicate, better also like work together and but also like, you know, where we understood that, for example, we don't need to have a lot of commodities and furnitures and a lot of stuff, as they would say, to be happy. A world where nature is really, and you know, like sometimes people say, oh, like to say that nature, we should be close to nature, that's being a green cuckoo. I mean, isn't it like something completely obvious that we need to see trees every day, that we can't just take the metro and go to our work and then just like go back to our flats and just like do that every day, and sometimes in holidays just like connect a bit with nature for like 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, we should have greener cities. I think that's something that we could really be amazing. And of course, that means also having some really good innovations. And I would really like also like that's something maybe a bit different, but on governance, I think we really need like different kind of governance, because I think if we really manage in 2050 to deliver on climate change and of course to really fight, mitigate, adaptate to climate change, that would mean that the political situations changed. Mm-hmm. And that would mean as well that our ways of governing, our ways of taking decisions changed as well, because how do you want to take decisions if you have people that are completely linked to businesses or fossil fuel companies? So, and that's something that's still happening mm-hmm. in a way or another. So for campaigns, because you need money to campaign, because you need, just you want power. And so that would also mean that we have different way of acting in like a political way in being together. And mm-hmm. so I think that would be a better and fair world, yeah. I can imagine.
And as a young man, for you, these 30 years before to reach 2050, is it a short term, long term, middle term? How do you see this space of time?
Yeah. And it's really funny you say that, because I was talking to someone else just before and she asked me a question about time, and I said, oh yeah, for us, like, it would be amazing as like youth-led NGOs to have a project in the next 2 years on advocacy, climate change and advocacy at the European level. And already 2 years is something completely massive to me. Like, okay. It's already like telling today we need to do a project in the next 2 years mm-hmm. and to work together during 2 years. It's completely crazy for me, because in the last 3 years, I did so many different projects and mm-hmm. commitments. So for me, even 5 years, 10 years, 10 years is half of my life, so
yes,
it's
of course
completely huge. But I think we can do things. I think we can really do things. I think in 2030 we have commitments. These commitments are based on the Conference of Paris of 2015, and Fridays for Future or Youth for Climate, we don't advocate for anything else. That we want you guys to listen to scientists, meaning we want you to follow what's written in the Paris Agreement. And that's as simple as it is. But I do think that, because now I'm more into the civil society part and the institutionalized civil society, because my organization is the one of the only network of youth-led NGO working on environmental issues mm-hmm. and climate change in Europe. So, of course, on my side, I know that we also have to continue our work to have seminars, have building capacities, sessions in order to empower youth. And on the other side, to have all this advocacy work, because mm-hmm. this advocacy work is essential. And I think that I can't say exactly, we need this thing in 2030, this thing in 2035, mm-hmm. this thing in 2040. I know they exist, but I'm not a policy officer of an NGO. Yes. I'm not an expert. The only thing I am is a young person trying to say to our politicians, now, in September 2019, it is time for you guys to hear our voices. Mm-hmm. Because it can't be possible that today you're not listening to us, because the decision you're taking today, it's us young people who are gonna experience this. And of course, today's political inaction, we're gonna face the consequences of this political inaction.
And to make your voices heard loud, you're working on a coalition, Generation Climate Europe, sure. with 6 demands to politics.
So for us, it was essential as youth-led NGOs to get ready and to propose something concrete after all these strike movements in all over Europe. Because when you look at the national levels, you have a lot of young people advocating for better action in climate change and environmental issues. When you look at the international level, it's kind of the same, because you have a lot of young delegates and some, people or NGOs working closely with politicians. But when you look at the European level, that's very different. And you don't have a lot of people working, going to the meetings, attending the main place where decisions are being taken. And that's why, with different youth-led NGOs, so one is working on students' rights, another one is a network of Catholic Christians NGOs, another one is a Think and Do Tank on climate change. So a very broad and diverse first coalition of youth-led NGOs to better advocate on climate change and environmental issues at the European level, because a lot of institutions are working every day on issues like fair transition, energy transition, poverty, social justice, climate change, and they are keen to mm-hmm. listen to us. I mean, it's just that we need also to be ready on our side to really propose something, because saying that we need to listen to science is essential. Mm-hmm. This was a first step. But I think the second step is to say, well, that's our demand. So it was really hard to get together because it's a huge work when, you know, like you're different youth-led NGOs, mm-hmm. you have different agendas, you have different strategies, different campaigns, different way of seeing and doing things. But we managed to get together and to have six demands. It's like the EU declares climate emergency. The EU should stop, you know, instead of saying we want you guys to stop using fossil fuel. We know that you can't achieve that in 1 or 2 years. But we say you need to stop subsidizing fossil fuel. That's something you can do in the next month. You should also, for example, have a tax and do all the thing you can to have a tax on kerosene. Or, for example, there is a meeting in October 2019 where they're going to decide the strategy for carbon neutrality in 2050. Well, please decide and really have the most ambitious carbon neutrality, because at the last council, you didn't decide for everything, for anything. So these demands are not perfect. These demands are just some demands, of course, based on like a huge consultation with strike movements, with youth-led NGOs, with policy officers, with adult NGOs, if I could say. But they are not perfect, because we thought that the best thing to do was to get together and to have something to advocate for. Yeah. And so these demands are only for 2019-2020. They are only for now what we managed to do together. But the idea for us is then the third step, mm-hmm. having our values, having like priorities, having statutes, all of that. So it's a first step. I know it's not enough. I know it's not perfect. But I believe and I really hope that the politicians at the EU level are going to listen to us, start listening to us and say, okay, you can come in this meeting, you can come in this meeting. And that's something we would work all together. Every time we would have a meeting or something like that, we would decide who should go, in order like not to mm-hmm. do something just for the few, but for the many.
When you talk with all the young people of all the NGOs you meet, do you feel that the youth has faith in technology to fix or to adapt to the climate changes?
I think it's a really interesting question, especially because it touches upon the fact that sometimes where you're a young climate activist or when you're a climate activist, you're always with the same network, you're always with the same people, and we all believe in a way or another in the same things, and we all believe that the technology is going to bring, is of course a part of the solution, but we really can't just wait for that, because scientists told us that maybe, you know, in 2060s we can expect that for hydrogen, by 2040 we can expect that for kerosene, but we can't wait. So we know, you know, with what we call the prospective, we can mm-hmm. know like what can we expect from the science in the next years, but we know that that's not enough, and we also have, you know, need for political efforts and also for individual behavioral changes. But there is a huge question in that, is that I think that this is my opinion. This is probably my opinion of a lot of my friends, of a lot of people I meet, young climate activists, etc. I'm probably almost sure that everyone would say exactly the same thing. It's good, but not enough. But I don't think that's the opinion of mm-hmm. the youth in general. And I think a lot of young people that are, you know, like just following everything from far, or just like that they don't care about it, I think a lot of them, it's really reassuring to think that technology is gonna bring the solutions.
I think that you feel that for the moment, climate issues, it's for maybe urban, white, young people. And how do you deal with this?
It's essential, and it's the question of inclusivity mm-hmm. in all the thing we are doing. I'm, of course, young, but I'm also a white male from the north, and all these kind of things that have that benefit from the education system of my state, that also have the access to health and to good healthcare, especially in France. But For me, we are an ecosystem. I know it's something that we usually don't use in English, but I think it's a really good image. It's that you have some people striking. You have some movements doing climate education. You have some people working on doing building capacity, having seminars. You have some people trying to interlink the different kind of issues, climate change with poverty, climate change with gender, climate change with homophobia, this kind of thing. And then you have like also people doing some very specific and niche advocacy work, and I know that my thing, I'm not saying it's the solution, I'm just saying that for me, the advocacy work I'm doing, the advocacy work that Generation Climate Europe would do if it works, is really a top thing, a very niche thing, from, you know, students that are so a bit boring, because I mean, who really wants to work on like legislation or these kind of things. But I do believe that the people that are going to do this coalition, which is, you know, like just people, like I said, that would be from the north, working on European Union, all of that, that doesn't mean that these people are not striking. Yeah. That doesn't mean that these people are not doing seminars or attending seminars on gender issues or poverty issues. That doesn't mean that we are not connecting on an everyday basis with people that are struggling, you know, because of course it's a project, and I think we are filling this gap of having people and all of that. And then it's the main responsibility, it's the responsibility of the coalition to then connect with everything, because a coalition has to connect. And I think that since the coalition is already composed of youth-led NGOs that are usually networks, so for example, me, Youth and Environment Europe, we are a network of almost 40 or 50 organizations in Europe, all over Europe. So we have also this connection with different realities, NGOs that are struggling every day because they are young, because they have no money in their countries. For example, we have members in Armenia, we have members in Azerbaijan, where like the realities of everyday life to do climate advocacy or social advocacy is really different. I would say that, you know, it's like, of course, like this project is focusing on something very specific, but that doesn't mean that we are not part of an ecosystem where different things are being done as well.
Going back to 2050, you seem to be optimistic.
Well, then I couldn't do anything if I wasn't optimistic.
Yes.
I would cry all the time.
What do you think about the collapsology?
Indeed, really interesting. And I was really surprised to see how it is well developed in France and not in other countries. When I was in the UK, I was quite surprised that in my environmental policy courses, like I wouldn't have a lot about it, rather than it's something way more common in France. For me, the only thing I can say is that it's showing what could happen. And I think we also need to be aware that these kind of things could happen, that everything could collapse, that everything could lead to wars. Yeah, I would say, is it by to depict, to draw how our future could look like? But then I really hope that all our efforts, all the thing we're going to do, all the thing we're doing, the tremendous movements and historic movements that has been started by Greta Thunberg now a year ago, is gonna really create the basis. Or that's the thing, it would be very pretentious to say that our youth-led movement is creating the basis of, you know, our future for tomorrow. It's not. I think we're actually coming, if we manage to do what we're doing today, if we have this amount of young people in the street, if we are actually gonna be able to advocate for some very specific thing and to be heard like we've never been before, that's also thanks to all the young and not young climate activists that have been fighting for the last 70 years. And it's really important to be aware of that as well.
Finally, Nathan, I would like you to make a wish for 2050.
I think my main wish would be to stop talking about climate change, because, you know, that would be something that we managed to deal with, that we are proud of it as, you know, mankind, like we managed to do it, and we did it in a fair way, meaning we did it including, because that would be a really, really north way of thinking, but not including, but being working on it as equal with the global south, with countries that are struggling way more than us, and also sharing the responsibilities, because the north has a much bigger responsibilities in the situation today, and that means that we have a bigger responsibility for our future. So yeah, I hope a world where we'll be able to have children without thinking twice about it, a world where we would have local and organic farms everywhere that could provide us with food. I really hope also, speaking about commodities and speaking about how our mobility, I really hope that we would regionalize, and instead of exchanging goods with Africa, with China and the US, well, no, just like, let's focus on Europe, let's focus on Africa. And yeah, if we can't eat avocado and banana, well, we'll eat what we can grow in our country. So yeah, I would like to see a world like that for my future.
Thank you so much, Nathan.
Thank you, Rebecca.
In the description of the episode, you'll find the links to Nathan on Twitter and Instagram, also to his NGO. You can join the conversation leaving a message on my voicemail. You'll also find me easily on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Don't forget to share this episode, and above all, let's always be curious.